If you have your Bible this morning, would you take it out and turn to Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6 and verse 1. And while you're doing that, let me say that you have a few months' worth of kind of pent-up things you'd like to talk about, and you all have probably lunch plans. So we'll stay with the text, interject a few things along the way, and over the next few months, hopefully we'll get to open up a lot of things that have been, I think, on all of our hearts and minds that we'd like to give some voice and expression to. One thing that we'd like to say is that it's always every human being who has made a decision along the way to follow Jesus always has this internal desire. I'd really like to be part of something big. Now, we're afraid to talk about that because it sounds like we either think we're grandiose ourselves, or we think that maybe we're more deserving than anybody else. But we've read the history of the church. We've read of these moments where things have been really amazing and incredible, and we always look back and go, man, I wouldn't it be really cool if something like that really big could happen, you know, to me, to us? Because we always want to be part of something big. But then something big happens, and you realize it's bigger than anything that you kind of had in mind. Because if you grow up a young Baptist preacher boy, you got all these big dreams. And by the way, I found out something about Jeff. He went to a Baptist church when he was little. He's hid that little known fact all his life. See? But you have these visions and these dreams. And generally speaking, because of the way those things get talked about, what your ambitions are really, really big crowds to hear this thing you've got to say. And then you find out that, well, you don't really say it as well as other people do. People don't have the attention span as long as you like to talk. All kinds of things kind of birth a bit of reality, you know, in us. And so then we start looking around and we say, well, if I could modify my expectations, if I could pull it back just a notch, if I could say, well, I'm probably not going to speak at Los Angeles Coliseum. Only Billy Graham types kind of get that opportunity. What else could we look around and say, I wonder what sort of big thing that's bigger than us could happen, that we could never dream of? Now, I've been doing church staff work for almost, it'll be 30 years this August. And then I was a volunteer bus driver and had me a little bus route in Oklahoma City, picking up some elderly ladies and a couple of folks in the flats to pick up to go to church. And so for 30 plus years, you know, you kind of think about church, and I lived half a block from the church, and mom and dad were always there and faithful, and you never ever heard two churches deciding, why don't we get together? My whole life. I heard it one other time in a story that Rusty's participated in the city. One other time in Houston. So it's not to say it doesn't happen. It just probably doesn't happen in a small town with so many churches. That's probably a reality. So to my way of thinking, when this kind of started roiling up and the Spirit, I think, was kind of having something to do with all of that, it's like, this could really be like one of those things. This could really be one of those moments where you could say, I've always wanted to be part of it, but never dreamed this would be it. I was thinking like book with by Todd Littleton on it, you know? It's really what it, you know, it's really kind of, or you know, something where you got your name emblazoned, you know? But the truth of the matter is, you know, all that really washes away when you recognize that really what matters are other people, not yourself. And that what could happen that other people could really get excited about and say, this is really bigger than anything I've ever heard of. So if it's okay with you, I think that's where we are. I think there's something bigger than any of us ever probably conjured along the way. at least if you'll allow me to kind of speak for most of us, I never thought it. I never thought it possible. I thought it was one of those roads, not less traveled, never traveled. So what happens when you start traveling a road nobody's ever traveled? Mark 6, verse 1. He went from there, that is, he had been all over the place teaching, and he had been doing some amazing things. And he went from there, and he came to his hometown, his fatherland, and his disciples followed him. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished. "Where did this man get these things?" they said. "What is this wisdom given to him, and how are these miracles performed by his hands? Isn't this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? And aren't his sisters here with us?" So they were offended by him. Then Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his hometown, among his relatives, and in his household. So he's not able to do any miracle there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he was amazed at their unbelief." Our whole text goes all the way to 29, and what follows is if Jesus is facing rejection in his fatherland, he sends the disciples out, and he tells them what to take for their journey and where to go. And interestingly, he includes this little bit that says, "And if you go into a house and they don't welcome you, just shake the dust off, head on down the road." So already, with the excitement commission, go do the things I'm doing, which is what Jesus said, go do the things I'm doing, and he's also letting them know, and be prepared to be rejected just like I'm rejected. Now, how's that for marching orders? Everybody signs up for that sort of kind of thing. And if that isn't enough, Mark inserts kind of the backstory of John the Baptist's death. It's a gruesome sort of thing. It's, you know, a celebratory moment. It's an exciting time, a lot of dancing going on, a lot of eating going on, and a lot of a drunken Herod. And then he makes this outlandish promise, and then he pays for it, and it costs John his head. It's almost like, you know, it probably would be okay if someone didn't let me into their house. I just think I'd rather keep my head. It's as if Jesus, through Mark, is saying, hey, it costs something to kind of travel this road. It means something to say, are you going to go here? Are you going to do those things? Are you going to be involved? Are you ready for all of that? I really think that really is something that we wrestle with. Are we ready for that? Are we ready for this? Are we ready for what happens? I mean, listen, it comes with a lot of excitement. You know, Jeff's rolling in a few things the other day, and he said, "Are we really doing this?" Yeah, we're really doing this. But you know, it also comes with a lot of dark temptations. Like, our church is better than your church. Or now, our two churches are better than your church. That's a dark temptation. You know, yeah, it's okay to be honest. My friend Jason Michelli, online friend, he's a Methodist minister in Washington, D.C., just recovered from what he calls stage serious cancer, mantle cell lymphoma, probably a better than 50-50 shot that he was going to die. We were having a conversation the other day, and he says, you know, I think the problem people have with honesty is due to the way we don't talk about God, and it's particularly Jesus and his humanity. Because if we can keep kind of God this other thing, and we've got this idea that God is this, you know, we can clean up all the bits about some of the tough parts, like Jesus being rejected. We can kind of clean it up, and we kind of say, well, that probably didn't hurt him. It probably didn't mean anything to him. It probably didn't damage his psyche. It probably didn't wound his spirit. It probably didn't have those effects, because after all, he was God. So we make it all about the divine or the deity, and so now we follow Jesus, and we got to parade around and put these masks on, and we got to pretend to be divine ourselves. See? And so we wear these masks, and we won't let down, and we won't let in. And it's a bit of pretension, and for some reason or another, God saw fit that when Mark is telling this better story Rather than applauding the Roman Empire, he's telling about a different kingdom. When he's telling this story, he's including bits about Jesus being rejected. Now, if it's your hero, if he's like the main character in the plot and he suffers this sort of thing, you would think you might clean it up and talk about all the good bits, all the good parts. Maybe those things are in there because looking at Jesus as an experience and his experience opens us up to a bit of like facing ourselves, our own honesty. Where have we hid behind the divine, putting on to others that we're probably just a little bit more righteous than maybe we really are when nobody's looking? See? So when we come to this event in the life of Jesus, and we've got this road rarely traveled. I thought about Robert Frost. You know, and by the way, it rarely happens. You can ask anybody who's been, I don't know when the last time I read a poem. So this idea that preachers do 3 points in a poem, forget it. But here's Robert Frost, right? Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. When I read the story of Jesus, I'm going like, there's a guy who took that road less traveled. He took the one having the options. And we don't like to talk about Jesus in that way, but he was just any young fella who's grown up a Jew and had these decisions to make. And his decisions were, what does faithfulness to the way of God look like in the world, and how will it be distinct and different from kind of what's being lived out? By the way, that's the story we're being asked to consider, really. See, there's always a story for the church. The story is getting told by others who are generally outside of the church about how bad we are, about how we're not really getting things done, how people are leaving us and how people aren't attracted to us, and how if we could just kind of shift this or shift that a bit, then why we could probably draw a crowd. The truth of the matter is the church as the agent or the means or the mission of God, we're simply living out a call that says, how about traveling this road? It's not traveled much. It's not well traveled. And sometimes you can't even notice that the leaves have turned black from the weight of the feet on top of them. But when we tell the story, but that there's a road less traveled by, and it's actually the road away from the empire, and it's a way into the kingdom. That really is the picture, and it's a better story. And so we started a few months ago, before we really knew this was going to happen, and thought that the theme would be good for us from now until Easter, is tell a better story. Imagine, like, where did that come from? Tell a better story. Because Mark is telling a better story. He's living in a world where Rome wields power and influence and orders people's lives. Sound familiar? And he tells a story about, no, there's a better way. There's a better road to travel. But be prepared. Be prepared. And here's what we have to be prepared for. You have to be prepared because everyone else has a better perception of you than you do. Well, they'll tell you. Everybody has better expectations for you than you do. Never? Well, look at it. Isn't it puzzling? Jesus goes home. And you would expect of all the places that he would have been well received would have been where? Home. And yet, instead of saying, where does wisdom come from? So who taught him? Where did all this power come from? We've seen the signs. They immediately go, we know people from here. Nobody from here really is worth doing things like that. See, they never questioned what Jesus taught. They didn't even question what he did, but they questioned him because they had already decided that anybody from Nazareth ought to fit this particular picture. This is our perceptions if you're from Nazareth. This is our perceptions if you're, these are our expectations if you're from Nazareth. And now everybody else's perceptions and expectations haunt us, don't they? I mean, they're really plague-like. They really are. The weight of everybody else's expectations. You've avoided all that, right? You grew up and nobody perceived you in a particular way, and nobody ever had expectations for you. I showed up at the wrong church. Wrong sermon. Let me try again. I'm fairly confident, I'm fairly certain that the weight of our cultural experience, our social interactions, even our politics are being formed for us and pressed on us. Well, there's Jesus facing all the weight of a system that practiced pressing its expectations and perceptions onto Jesus so that they could look at him and go, "You're from here. You're not from there." Well, where would there be? Well, obviously, he was from Nazareth. It was hometown. But when he chose a different road, he was choosing a different story. And really, in the end of the day, that's really what the church, what Christians are really calling people to, is a different story. It's a different story. It's somehow not this singular moment of an incantation-like prayer. Hopefully that wasn't offensive. Instead, it really is about there is a road that's better traveled. And though it's difficult, it turns out better because in the end, the aim is what the world may become. I know we get distracted because all we're prone to talk about is the world to come. That is the one after this one kind of disappears. But Jesus spent so much time talking about what the world could become if people would follow him, that we've traded the become for something to come. When the reality is, if we could work toward its becoming, it would be to come already. That's the already not yet part of our hope. And so Jesus faced that rejection. He faced that. Now, Jesus also, we have to recognize, he had to address change. You hate that, don't you? Man, I like it. You know, when I read that these big CEOs wear the same thing every day, like Facebook dude, Zuckerberg, same thing every day. Steve Jobs, same black shirt every day. I'm like, well, it makes your wardrobe easy, right? Right? I mean, but what if someone went in and they did to Clinton, Heartbreak Ridge, and they came in and he always swapped colors of T-shirts for his little group that was he was training? I know, I did see the movie. Yeah. What about all of that? Huh? See, Jesus deliberately chose a different course. Oh, I know. You're going to keep reminding me he's God, but he was a young man. He had to make a choice. He chose at 12 what to have conversations about. He chose that. So he's choosing this particular course, and he had to deliberately make a choice to change. Now, here's the thing that we get fooled by. We think that change is hard work. Do you know that staying the same is really hard work? The harder work is to stay the same. Because we're always facing forces that were externally around us and internally within us. Always being pressed. So to war and fight against those things that God may be using to mold and shape us, we're resisting because we will not be moved. You know, that's a famous last line of the church. We shall not be moved. It's work to stay the same. It's work to maintain, to keep things as they are. It's work. And it's not like we're asking anyone to change their notion of the important bits of the story, but we're suggesting that the bits of the story that we are learning ought to be changing us. Isn't that what Jesus means when he says, take my yoke, my burden is easy. My yoke is easy and my burden is light, Jesus said. Maybe he knew. All you turkeys out there wanting to stay the same, listen, it's work. But if you want to kind of experience some real change into the kingdom, why don't you come on my way? Well, it doesn't mean it won't be difficult. He's being rejected, but it does mean we face some change. We always face change. That's what the word transformation means. We're moving from one thing to another. It's the in-between. It's the to. It's the on our way. And if we're going to take that road less traveled, we're going to have to make a choice. And change is a choice. It's uncomfortable. It's discomforting. It's unsettling. It makes us nervous and anxious. But that's why we do it together. You do remember that the scriptures are directed to groups of people, save maybe one, written to Philemon. All of it rests to a group. No one ever expected anybody to follow Jesus all by themselves. Did you get that idea anywhere? No. And God didn't expect churches to travel through performing their mission all by themselves either. Change is required. So, are you ready? A little change? Well, not anything right now. Like, maybe I should cut it short because you'd get out 10 minutes. Last week it was like, what happened to you? You cut it off. I'm like, well, I was done. I can make up more stuff if you want me to. But I was done. When you're done, you just quit, right? So here's Jesus. He's facing rejection. He's giving us an illustration of what change looks like, but know something. When we fail to travel his road, we put the brakes on what's possible. Okay? When we decide not to travel that road, we put the brakes on what is possible. Do you see it in the text? Last bit of what we read? And Jesus was amazed at their unbelief. Mark tells us that wasn't a lot Jesus could do when a lot of that disbelief was going on. A lot of the unbelief was happening. Not a lot could be done. And I know this rankles some of our theological preconceptions about God and all, but here it says that if you're failing to believe and disbelieving, it limits possibilities. Jesus only laid his hands on a few. And that's not what you get everywhere else. You get he healed everyone they brought to him. Everyone they brought to him. But here in his hometown, where they had their expectations and perceptions of him already pressing on him, where they didn't want that sort of change coming from anyone in their town, they said, we're not going to believe it. And it put limitations on what Jesus, hear me this, could do. Now you go home and stew over that over lunch. But it put limitations on what Jesus could do. That's in the text. I'm not making that up. It's right there. So here's the deal. A lot of times when folks like us get together for church, what we talk about are all the ways that person is not believing. And we start trying to think, how can we make a better argument so that they'll begin believing? But a lot of times, ready? A lot of times the disbelieving and unbelieving happens in here, not out there. A lot of times those, because everyone in his hometown should have known, they were good Jews. They were longing for Rome to be gone. They were so tired of the yoke, they couldn't stand it. They wanted someone to come and lead them to a new place, to a new way, to a new vision. But because they couldn't fathom beyond their own perceptions and expectations, because they resisted change so much, they actually cut out possibility. Well, I'm here to tell you, some of us here believe this opens up possibility. That the very idea that two churches could do something is not something to be disbelieved or live in unbelief, but to say, no, it's an expression of believing. It opens up possibility. Listen, I have no idea where we'll go. Jeff didn't come with a list of things and say, I think this is where we'll go. Nobody sat down, I think, at either place and said, okay, this is where we say, God, would you open up my imagination? Would you energize my will to work? And the thing we never, ever thought could happen, now that it's happened, make something possible that wasn't possible. Let's make something possible that wasn't possible. And the consequence isn't so someone can say, look what they did. It's to say, look at this way you should go. This is who you should trust. This is who to follow. Because listen, let's just say it what it is. If we, in any of our groups, got together and thought, boy, this is going to really make us stand out, we should undo what we did. We should undo what we did. Because after all, really what we want is, we want folks to see in Jesus the good life. And in the good life, what that looks like is that in the face of traveling that road never traveled, we'll remain faithful. Faithful. I asked Patty today, I said, I had this thought to use as an illustration. What would you rather have, a perfect spouse or a faithful spouse? She said, don't use that on me when we argue. But do you get the distinction, right? We're not perfect. We are not going to be perfect. We are going to disappoint each other. We are going to make mistakes along the way. It has already happened for us if we've been doing this any amount of time. But the goal is not perfection. The goal is faithfulness. So when we falter and when we fail, that's when we practice the things you practice on that road less traveled. We practice forgiveness, reconciliation, restoration. Those are the things we practice along the way because we recognize our imperfections. And what we do is say, listen, we're going to help each other be faithful because this is bigger than any one of us. So, how about that road? I think if we're traveling in Robert Frost Woods and we approach two paths, we better mark the one that Jesus took and say, that's the road we'll travel.